Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have a very interesting show for you today. I love Mondays, especially maybe every other Mondays, even though I love all my shows. But this is an opportunity for me to catch up with one of our guests who joins us every other Monday. It's also an opportunity for me to meet new friends, learn about new opportunities, and learn about new businesses. And I'm going to introduce our guests, but before I do, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Go ahead and share the show. Tweet a friend, text a friend, call someone, let them know this is the show you've been talking about, the show you tune into every weekday at 8 a.m. Pacific. Let them know we're sharing information. Our guests are here in an organic roundtable discussion. We're taking notes. We're recording the show. And guess what? You don't want to miss it. So I'm sure your friends don't want to miss it as well. So while you're sharing the show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce the lady I was telling you about. I know you recognize her name. You recognize her face because she joins us so often. Miss Allison Allman, the organization maven. Good morning. Oh, I'm sorry. You changed your name. Your new name is Lady Maven. Good morning, Lady Maven of the organization maven. How are you this morning?
I am doing great. It's Monday, which is my favorite day of the week. I get to start off the week fresh and full of excitement and joy and fun. And so I'm excited. It's Monday.
Yes, I'm excited to have you here. So what have you been up to? I know you were on a show. I was so excited to see you pumped up about it, you doing your thing. Tell us about it.
So I was on a show regionally for the Los Angeles area, where it's called Destination LA, and it features the best companies, restaurants, different facets and business in Orange County and LA County of Southern California. And so I was featured for my home organizing business, and I had an opportunity to talk about how I got started and show off some things in my studio apartment on how I organized it. And it was just really exciting to be a part of the process. It aired on CBS, the LA market, and KCAL9 as the LA market as well. And then what's great though for all of US is it's available through Amazon Prime Playback. You can go on to Amazon Prime Video, search Destination LA, and then scroll down to the third episode and then purchase that for 99 cents. And so I'm about 10 minutes into the episode, and it's just very brief, but it's very powerful. The whole process was fun. I'm friends with all the production crew still, and there's just a lot of opportunities on the horizon now that really opened a lot. And it really just goes back to the core feature of wanting to help my clients with their clutter. And I just see their clutter differently. They're overwhelmed and sad and mad and grumpy and buy too much and, you know, rebuy through Amazon 100 times. And I come through and organize and just really just see their house for their house. And I'm able to just help them enjoy family time again, although we had a ton of it this year and a lot of us are done with 2020. But being home this year, people realized, wow, I need to tackle this. I'm not qualified for this. Let's get Allison in here.
Okay, so I know we're gonna tune into the show. We're gonna check it out. But how did you get your start in this business?
Well, I've always had a really motivating spirit. I've always wanted to be an organizer. I started at 20 back in 1999. And just a lot of just different things happened in my life. I had a lot of admin jobs, but I always did things at the admin job, like water the plants or go pick up the dry cleaning and just do all these different tasks. The office just really bored me, being in an office all day and having the same schedule. I really like the variety of being outside and doing odd jobs, and then kind of just changed it from there. Coincidentally, 5 years ago today, I had an interview done for a local blog called iHeart Costa Mesa, and they interviewed me. And back then I was a Girl Friday. I didn't have a Facebook page. I didn't have a website. I didn't really have much of anything but a business card. And people hired me to do odd jobs, house cleaning. And I did a lot of digging of holes for plants and trimming back holly bushes. That's a bad idea. You need to wear gloves for that thing. I did not know. I found out the hard way. A lot of just people just saying, hey, my neighbor hired you for this. Can you come help me for this? And I just did a lot of that. And so it was really kind of cool coming across that link from 5 years ago. And I have it on my Instagram, and I have everything on my Instagram, all my before and after pictures. And everyone can find me through the organization Maven, with the little at symbol, and you can search through Instagram or really anywhere online. It's all the same handle and brand.
You done went into marketing mode. Yeah. We're in, what made you decide to focus completely on the organization aspect as opposed to the Girl Friday aspect?
Well, I really liked organizing, but I didn't know how to market myself as an organizer. Everyone knew me as a house cleaner or an odd job lady, which where the Girl Friday part came into play. I also at the time was searching to be the personal assistant to one person, because that's what I thought I was meant to do. So I was kind of like on the search for someone to hire me sort of full time as a personal assistant. And so what I ran into, especially with the moms as my area, is they didn't need a full-time personal assistant. They needed someone for 3 or 4 hours a week, every other week. And so then I, once I took the focus off of looking for one person to assist, I kind of looked at my calendar and thought, how can I fill this? So I'll do 2 hours with Susie and 5 hours with Jane and, you know, 6 hours here. So I just started filling my calendar. So then I evolved and someone said, oh, you're not a personal assistant. I think I was at a networking meeting and someone's like, you're not a personal assistant. And I'm like, I'm not, like, I feel like I am. And she goes, no, you're a personal concierge. And I go, what's that? And she goes, Google it. And I Googled it and I go, oh, I am a personal concierge. So then I was that for a couple of years. And I reached a point where I just didn't want to be a house cleaner and an odd job person. I really wanted to focus on organizing. And so what I started doing is just eliminating services. I had on my Facebook page, like 10 services that I offered, and I had organizing at the top, but then I had all these other lesser ones and people were contacting me for the lesser ones. So then I just started deleting the lesser ones until the only thing that was left was organizing. So they literally could pick that one. There wasn't any other options. And so it was really, so then someone kind of got mad that I wasn't a concierge anymore. So I had to, they didn't like that my Facebook page that said I was a concierge since I wasn't. So another panelist that we've had on our show, Karen from the Dragon and the Rose, said, why don't you call yourself the organization Maven? And I go, what's that mean? She goes, Google it. And I go, okay. And I go, oh, I am the organization Maven. So and I think a lot of it was just like trial and error and talking to people. And it's just been an exciting journey. I've always been positive and hard driven. And, you know, dig deep and work hard. And I mean, a lot of that's my upbringing. So my dad just retired at 81 and a half. So I mean, it's like, we just are all workaholics in my family.
No, that's a good thing. But I see a pattern here. We're going to see if you're going to stay the organization Maven, or somebody's going to be like, no, maybe you're this. And then you're going to say, what's that? It's like, I don't know. Google it. And then all of a sudden, we're going to have a new profession for Al. I'm going to come up with one. I don't know. I'm going to think by the end of this show, I'll have a new profession for you and say, you know what, Allison, that's really what you do. But I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Helene Berkowitz. She is a retail tech executive and startup founder with a background in finance and international payment systems. She is passionate about technology with a human component. In 2017, she founded Receipt Me to create a digital retail experience focused on customer experience. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm doing well.
You are so welcome. I love the backdrop.
Yes. I really wanted a good backdrop that looks professional without anyone seeing the reality of working mother of four.
Yes, I'm just
something
waiting
we can all appreciate.
I'm waiting for a little one to just run by. It's like, mom, mom. Yes. No, but it is professional. I like it. I like it. And the reason I like to notice people's backgrounds is you can kind of get an idea of their personality and what they're looking for. And that just looks serene, almost as if I was in a therapist or a doctor's office. So I just want to kind of
read. What I'm going for, that the vibe should be serene when our lives are anything but. So, yeah.
Well, mission accomplished. Thank you for joining us here today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, you know, professionally, I come from a financial services background, just about 20 years, both in Dallas, Texas, my hometown, and now in Israel, where I've been living for 15 years. You know, Israel is known as the startup nation. And so the country is so focused on technology and business in such a great way that it really embraces a lot of diverse approaches to high tech, to, you know, innovative solutions. And so it's sort of in the air we breathe, and even in conversations on the bus or the train or in a coffee shop, these kinds of things just sort of permeate the whole culture. Married with four girls, teens. So our life is quite busy and never boring.
Four girls, four teens. I am so sorry. I am just so sorry. You got a lot of emotions going on in the house. People
you
crying.
You have no idea. they're ages 11 through 20. So it's crazy. Good crazy, but crazy.
Yes, I apologize to your husband as well. I know he probably bald right now. I can tell.
He's outvoted on everything.
Everything. He's probably watching this now and saying, "Dear God, don't say anything too private."
I don't know. Is that Mitel Lowenstein?
No.
Whoever that is, they said you're the best.
Oh, she's a friend of mine, Mitel. She's the best. Your check is in the mail. No, but anyway, like I've taught my husband that when he gets the inevitable comment of, "Oh my God, you have four girls," he should just say something hilarious like, you know, "I enjoy being surrounded by beautiful women," or something.
That's so wonderful. That is so cool.
That's our approach.
Let's talk finances. Let's talk about your business. What motivated you to go into that industry?
So, you know, I'm familiar with payment systems and that kind of and investments and that kind of vibe of, you know, helping. I came from an investment background, helping high net worth clients grow their wealth, moved over to payment systems and such. And this journey of entrepreneurship was so surprising. I never saw myself as an entrepreneur, even calling myself that now. I have a little bit of imposter syndrome. I don't know if that's ever happened to y'all or not, where
I'm a talk show host.
So you get it. It happened sort of by accident with a very, very normal everyday occurrence. I'm sure that's happened to all of us. My husband, who I just spoke about, he really hates to shop for himself and he wanted a new pair of jeans. So I said, you know, I'll just go after work. There's a local shop, you know, one of those sort of like mini Targets. I picked them up a pair of jeans, but as we have four girls, I don't know anything about men's clothing and I bought the wrong size. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I said, okay, no problem. I'll just get the receipt and exchange it for the right one, but I couldn't find it. And I started, I don't know if this has ever, I'm sure this has happened to you. It happens to all of us. We go searching for that. We can't find it. It's this painful moment of, do I just lose that money I just spent on something or what? And so that was sort of my aha moment, my light bulb moment, as it were. I thought, it's crazy that in such a high-tech world where, you know, drones can deliver products to our door and robots are performing surgeries and all these incredible deep tech innovations we're surrounded by, that we're still getting bits of paper or emails when we buy stuff in a store. Mm-hmm. And so it just sort of occurred to me that there has to be a better digital way. And so I started looking into what the solutions were at the time, a few years ago. And I found that all of them were kind of lacking something. Either there was an email version, which is sort of ironic now when we talk about contactless shopping, that you still often have to manually type in your email address. That's not really contactless. And you know, I mean, I could ask, how do you feel when a store asks you for your email address?
Oh, they don't get it at all. I don't like.
Of course not.
I don't.
No, because you know. Email. Yeah,
I have
exactly. A lot of people
that
do that.
Give out.
Because you know that as soon as you give them their email, your email address, they're going to bombard you with email marketing campaigns, and it's just such a hassle. And so I thought, it's crazy. There's got to be a better way. And so that was the impetus behind ReceiptMe, to create a mobile platform that combines all of your digital receipts from in-store shopping into one place, kind of like how WhatsApp automatically organizes your conversations. So our whole tagline is like, no email, no text, no paper, no email, just simplicity on a phone. It's just a really simple solution to a very normal everyday problem.
Wonderful. It reminds me of being a little girl, even though I was 18 years old, and my first job out of high school was working for TWA, for Trans World Airlines. Mm-hmm. And I got there and I said, why are you faxing passengers reservations? Why don't you just email it to them? And their response to me was, this is the way we've always done it. Mm-hmm. This is the way we will always do it. And if you have never heard of TWA, that's why. Not because of the email, not because of the fax, but because you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to change and be able to grow and utilize exactly what you said, technology to improve our lives. So I love it. I love the whole idea. The question that came to mind with me is this something that we can use at any company, or do we, like, if we want to use, I'm not even gonna mention a name, no free advertising, but if you go to the store, can everyone accept it?
Ideally, yes. It's a big ask that we're trying to accomplish right now. Ideally, yes, any store, any physical store can use ReceiptMe. I won't bore you with all the high tech talk. But basically it requires us integrating with their point of sale systems. For those who aren't familiar with the point of sale, it's a computerized cash register, mm-hmm. but it's pretty easy for us to onboard any physical retailer with our system. It's not available widespread now because we're a young startup and we're working hard to onboard those customers. But ideally you could shop in 10 different stores, and you would get all of your digital receipts on one platform. And that includes large appliances. You know that pain point of you buy a fridge and 6 months later, you need to take advantage of the warranty, but who has that 6 months later? Nobody. So that's kind of our goal.
I don't have it 6 days later. Like, that's my biggest thing. I don't keep hardly anything because time I'm going to look for it, then I don't, you know, the product's 2 years old or 18 years old. And so I just kind of get rid of everything. So I'm that kind of person that would really like ReceiptMe. However, from the other side, there may be brick and mortar stores who might want to resist it, not because it's not a great idea, but just like gift cards. Gift cards are one of these ways that just give companies money for no reason, because most people don't redeem gift cards. They get them, but then throw them in a drawer. So I can kind of see that with this ReceiptMe idea, where stores might be like, no, because they profit and they benefit from someone who has lost their receipt.
That's a fair point. And it's true that there are some retailers that, it's like you said, they profit on the loss. If you buy a pair of jeans and it doesn't fit you or you don't like it and you don't return it, because let's face it, it still requires you to take some action. You still have to go there. It's true that some retailers don't want to embrace, you know, returns and exchanges, but the majority of smart retailers realize that returns and exchanges are actually an upsell opportunity, because, and Kohl's and Amazon is like a perfect example of this. Kohl's allows you to return or exchange something you bought online on Amazon, because what happens is Kohl's profits go up because you're there and you happen to look at something and you think, oh, I really like that sweater or whatever it is. And so smart retailers know that they can use return and exchanges as a great opportunity. And there's a side benefit that, you know, the world is moving in this direction already and has been for quite some time. So whether they use ReceiptMe or another e-receipt provider, they're going to have to use some digital solution eventually anyway, just because this is the way of the world. So
yeah, fair point. I like it. I like to ask the questions because the audience may be thinking the same thing. So I want to ask what I think they want to know, but I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Megan Magali. Megan was 16 years with Johnson & Johnson, selling in the operating room a laser scalper for open heart surgery. Magali Public Relations last 16 years, focusing on emerging brands and professional athletes. Good morning, Mayan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you.
Where are you located?
Well, we are up in New York City.
I always ask the East Coast people because they always have the shawls and the blankets. And I'm like, oh, it's cold wherever you are.
It is. It is.
You know, I'm not going to brag just because I'm in Southern California with a 10-minute walk to the beach. That's not, you know, relevant to today's conversation. But tell us a little bit about yourself. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yes, so I started my career in medical sales, working in the operating room. I sold a laser scalpel for open heart surgery. I did that for quite a long time. I had three children, and it was becoming very, very difficult for me to not be able to be contacted while I was in the operating room. So I knew that I would need to make a transition in my career rather soon. So my youngest daughter, Shay, has a form of muscular dystrophy, and she's in a wheelchair. And I also knew that she was going to require a lot more of my time as a mother. So it was a very difficult decision to leave there, because that balancing act that women do of, you know, trying to continue climbing up the corporate ladder while juggling a million different other balls. So I left Johnson & Johnson. I worked for a biotech company in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Genzyme Genetics. And then I started a public relations firm in New York, which seems to be an unusual transition from medical sales to public relations. But my youngest daughter, who I just referred to, Shay, had written a book, and she wrote it in a diary, and I found it in her room one Thanksgiving. And like any good mother, I read the diary. And
any self-respecting mother, that's right.
You know it.
And I saw little stories that she had written. She had a companion dog that would tuck her in at night and turn the lights out. And the stories were of her companion dog after he tucked her in, going ice skating with other dogs and cats in the neighborhood. The second book was swimming the Atlantic Ocean. And I knew what she was doing was envisioning what it would feel like to ice skate and to swim and to walk. So, you know, I'm a salesperson at heart. I took the book. I had it self-published. I had a brother-in-law who went to Rhode Island School of Design. He did all the illustrations. And I just started banging on the doors of literary agencies. Long story short, we went to FAO Schwartz in New York. And I walked in, I said, I'd like to speak to the president of FAO Schwartz. And they kind of laughed. And they said, you know, he's down Broadway, six blocks. And I trudged down there with Shay, my daughter, and the companion dog. And the elevator opened up, and it was the senior VP of FAO Schwartz walking with a fur coat on. And I thought, oh, this may not be a good match for my dog book. And she's wearing a fur coat. But she ended up, we told her what we were there for. And she immediately said to me, I'm going to take you in. I think your story is so endearing, and the fact that you would just come here. So we pitched it to the president of FAO Schwartz that minute. And I said, I'll do all the promotion. I'll do everything. And I said, all I need is a home. And he said, you just found it. So we launched, we did a partnership with Build-A-Bear, a global partnership. We raised $2.3 million on that children's series and donated every penny to charity. And that was what really brought me to public relations, because that gal that had the fur coat on when FAO Schwartz went out of business then called me and said, you were the best salesperson I've ever met. Would you consider going into business with me? And I said, well, what business is it? And she said, public relations. And she said, my husband is the head of security for the New York Yankees. And I thought, okay, bingo, you know, I'm in. So she and I partnered, and we started Migalli Public Relations. We represented.
Okay, Megan, I don't want to cut you off, but that's okay. What I tended to here. And because I don't want to go too far away from this point, because sometimes the guests give us gold in their lives and their stories, and we may not even realize the beauty in what we were saying. Because when you were speaking, that was an incredible experience. But what made you decide to go down there? What, I mean, because that's not something people do. FAO Shorts is one of the largest of the large. So right. for you to even go there and expect to get in or answered or have a right. secretary not turn you away, what gave right. you the confidence and the conviction to say, I'm going down there?
Right. Well, I think really the answer to your question is sales. I am a salesperson at heart. And if you don't ask, you don't get. And I knew that this was something that was so special just because of the passion behind the project. I just knew that I would find a puzzle piece for this. So
well, why not call? Why not email? Why not send it in a letter?
You know? Yeah. Well, I always think that meeting somebody in person, shaking someone's hand, looking into someone's eyes, I really think that you get a really good sense of people that you want to do business with. And I think that's what we resonated. And I knew that having Shay there in the wheelchair with the dog, you know, we happened to hit somebody that was an incredible dog lover. My partner at Magali Public Relations. And that's something that I do all the time. I mean, now in public relations, you got to be pretty bold, and right. especially in the New York market, you know, to get clients to where you wish they want to be on, you know, media placements have become very hard. So, you know, I have that in my nature. And it's a very organic thing for me to do. I know it's not easy for everyone to do. For me, it's very easy to do that because people are people.
Okay, well, you got your next client, Sharifa Hardy's running for California State Senate. And we're going to need somebody to show up somewhere at Newsom's. We might have to send you to Governor Newsom's to be like, look, I don't know, but we go get Sharifa. If we need to bring everybody, we're going to bring the dog, the family, everybody. But I think the idea.
She's got the guts. Why not?
That's yeah. what I'm saying. But I think the idea is that you saw that. This was a group of people that they could not, that they would not say no to. That's what I think.
Thought so, yes. Yes. I thought so, yes. And I also, you know, I did the same with Maxine Clark, who's the CEO of Build-A-Bear, or was the CEO. I just sent her, I FedExed her a letter, and I said, I have a great idea for the two of us. We'll raise a tremendous amount of money. And I pitched her on, it's called Marvelous Mercer is the book series. I pitched her on it. And believe it or not, and I did it signature, you know, so she had to sign for it, which you have to pay extra for. But I thought that I know she'll get it. And 2 days later, she called me. I almost fell off my chair. And we did the partnership we did raised about $10 million.
You build
a Mercer. So anyway, so that was my start to public relations, and then getting into sports obviously was more of an influence of Nanette. And then we also do work with healthcare organizations, but we've really had to pivot because of COVID very recently, because sports clients don't need promotion right now. They don't need media placement because once, you know, nobody's in the stadiums and no one's able to watch a basketball game. Once that changes, we'll be back in business. But for the last 7 months, it's been very difficult for us. So as an organization, we've had to pivot.
Okay, we're going to pivot right into politics. What do you think so far, Allison?
I think that she's a bulldog and that she's great for you, Sharifa. I know Sharifa in real life. So I know that you're going to get her to the governor or whatever you're running for, the Senate. Sorry.
Yes.
I don't know enough about politics and the houses and how it all works and any of that stuff. But
no,
you're going
to
get Sharifa there.
In any industry, because I kind of had a similar path. I was always focused more on podcasting or marketing, social media marketing. That was really my forte. But then I got a job as director of marketing for a television network. We took the company public, did an IPO. And one of the things that I learned, and I tell people to this day, it was the public relations that allowed us to raise the $6 million that we raised.
Yeah.
It wasn't the marketing. It was the public relations because
right.
we developed a story and we got it out there and people fell in love with that story and we were able to raise money.
Yeah, that's a great point because, you know, it's very common for clients to come into us. And that's the first thing we say is tell us your story. Mm-hmm. And the second thing we say to them is the story you just told us is very likely not the story we're going to be telling. Mm-hmm. And that's how because we know how to get that media placement. And, you know, your story may be very mundane or you just may have a great idea. But, you know, it's like being, you know, being an author. If you don't know how to market your book, no one's going to buy it. And that's you know, we do a lot of work with the Wall Street firms now, with Morgan Stanley and some VC groups. And when they decide to invest in young companies, they hire us to really raise the bar, you know, and create buzz on those companies. And, you know, then that's done through media placement. And they want to get their money back and they want to get their money back, you know, threefold. Yeah. Yes, so
of course
they want to sell the company. So we do a lot of that now. And that's what's been part of our pivot from sports, you know, because we had to. And the other thing we've gotten involved in, which I think is critically important for any business is, you know, we are extremely good from the sports background that I have in partnerships, like the Build-A-Bear partnership. But for all of these athletes that are coming off the Olympics, you know, we negotiate all those partnerships for them. So we're extremely good at building relationships for any business. We're extremely good at finding money for companies that are young and, you know, and grant writing and monies that are out there that people don't know about. You know, we have a grant writer on staff. We're just incredibly good at injecting into businesses that have either hit a plateau or they're just starting into really, you know, climbing the ladder of exposure and awareness for that brand.
Yes, I think that's beautiful. Now we have a young startup here with Receipt Me. We've heard her story, what it does. From a public relations perspective, what kind of advice would you give to Helen?
Well, I need to understand a little bit more about who she does business but you know, I think that you know, the greatest it factor that you have right now is COVID related, because people are no longer willing to go into stores. Everyone's doing curbside delivery and, mm-hmm. and to be able to have a platform with which I understand, you know, allows you to digitize those receipts. That's the kind of services everybody is looking for right now. Anything that doesn't require them to engage, get in their car and go into the store and whatever. Now that will change once there's a vaccine and people have taken it. So the window on that is going to be very short. But you know, I think that that's probably my best set of advice for you. We just had a former client that called us and said, we can't afford to pay you any longer. And it was a young kid that was at a Goldman Sachs, and he runs a company called Good Soups, and he had a brick and mortar store that sold soup on, you know, to the Wall Street guys, you know, at 12 o'clock on Monday through Friday. And what we did, I said to him, forget about paying me, but we've got to pivot your business. We've got to flip it around. So what we did was we then changed the entire website, and we allowed it to be a mechanism for people all over the world, all over the country, that were looking at New York and seeing these frontline workers in such distress with no PPE and they're working 18-hour shifts. And it allowed me in Minnesota to make a donation, because no one knew how to help, make a donation of $50. And then he then sent soup right into the hospitals, because it was sent in through FedEx, for the frontline workers. And it turned his entire business around. He's now making 300% more than he was making when he had the brick and mortar stores with no overhead. Those are the kind of things that businesses need to do right now.
But when you mention that, it may have seemed so simple to you, so easy, you know, but it truly was gold. It's a different perspective.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on what Megan had to say, Helen?
So I could not agree more. I just wonder about what Megan thinks and what anyone else has to say about the idea that there may be more than one compelling story, not just for my own business, but for others. You know, and it can change depending on who the audience is. For my own business, I'd say, you know, for customers, it's obvious what the story is. It's convenience, it's contactless, it's, you know, health benefits, digital, all that stuff. For retailers, because we're a B2B platform, for retailers, it's a totally different story. It has nothing to mm-hmm. do with really convenience. They don't really care about that. They mm-hmm. care about, you know, enhancing the retail experience with technology. They care about data more than anything else. So our story for them is quite different. So just to go back to my long-winded question, you know, what do you do when there's more than one compelling story? Really? It feels like that to me.
No, I'm the queen of long-winded. Believe okay, me, fine. I got a gold star in long-winded. I'm sure Megan and Allison probably want to answer your question. And I'm going to answer the question based on my experience.
Please.
I had a whole marketing and PR team, especially when we were raising capital. And one of the things that I believe, and again, I would love to hear Megan's thoughts on this, and I have taught, is one of the difference between in PR, between being great and or being good and being great, is understanding the art of the spin. So if you don't know how to spin a story, then you're going to only stay at one level. So when you ask, is there more than one story? I think we always start out with one story, but at some point in time, that story is going to get flat. It's going to get old, just like a chair. If you're selling that chair initially, you may be selling it because it's the newest chair. It's the safest chair. This chair is not going to break even if you have the biggest butt. I don't know. But at some point in time, you have to be able to get that story back out there in a way that's interesting. So just like a website, I believe a story is a living, breathing organism. You have to always be constantly thinking of new ways to tell that story. But that's my thoughts. I would love to hear your thoughts, Megan.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion is a little bit different. You know, I think that, you know, what any business needs to do that is, you know, contemplating a marketing or a PR, you know, pitch or story is to really see what's trending, what's trending on the media. Because, you know, first as a business, you have to decide, who am I selling to? Who's my sale to? What demographic am I going after? And that's one story. Most businesses only have one story, but you have a little bit different situation because you do have two stories. You sell to the companies and you also sell to the consumer. So there's nothing wrong with having two stories, but I think that that story is going to fluctuate depending on what's happening in the market. And a good example of that would be, you know, clients that have contacted us about coming on board, we've said to them, you know, let's not do anything until after January, because right now, you know, if it's not a social justice, it's not, the campaign, the election, or COVID, no matter how much you pay me, I can't get you placement on media right now. I can't get you anything. So this is a great time to be formulating new stories for January. And in the media, we have calendars. So January is health and wellness. So, you know, any of our brands that, you know, like we have one this afternoon, a call this afternoon with a brand that, you know, it's an opiate vaccine for people struggling with addiction. That's going to be very relevant in January. So we're going to be all over that. And I think if you're cognizant of those different times in the media calendar, it's going to increase the probability of you getting any placement for your brand. And I think every brand needs placement. You know,
I've been talking about that calendar for years, and I never knew it was a media calendar.
Yeah, it's a media calendar. And I think the other thing too is, you know, very, very influential for your business would be the some of the people on the morning shows that do the new technology, that do the seals and deals, that do the small business type stories. I think they would be a gold mine for you. And just because, you know, media companies like mine have those contacts, it doesn't mean that you can't start trying to pitch them yourself. Because I didn't always have those contacts. When I started with Shay's book, I had no contacts. I worked in the medical industry. But they will allow you to submit things on, you know, through the website. And if the story is a puzzle piece for something else they're working on, you may be surprised if you get that call, you know, just like with the organizing with CBS in LA, you know, you just hit them at the right time. So, you know, that would be my suggestion.
Thank you.
What was your feedback, Allison, on the question as far as stories? Because I know you recreate yourself all the time.
Well, I follow the media calendar, which I now have a title to, because I've just called it the seasons calendar or something, where there's like a sales cycle. And every January, people, well, like health and wellness, they get out of debt and everything. So I tailor my organizing, and I all the content that I start pushing right before January is get organized, get, you know, get out of debt, you know, that kind of stuff. So I, so, I mean, I definitely follow a similar calendar on my marketing.
So let me just ask you this, Allison, when you said that you followed the media calendar and January is health and wellness, and then you said, get organized, how is that message tailored specifically for health and wellness as opposed to get organized in February or August?
Well, people do those New Year's resolutions where every January they decide they're going to lose the weight, they're going to run out and buy a scale. That's when exercise equipment is hot and everyone runs out and buys it new. They don't buy it. The digital scale at home isn't good enough, so they go to Target and buy another one. And they said to themselves, I'm going to get out of debt. I'm going to, you know, live my life better. They set those New Year's resolutions. And so, so I kind of push along the lines of let's get organized. Let's find those receipts. Let's work on your home office. Like it kind of just depends, but I definitely put that New Year theme of resolutions or getting things done, or this is like, especially like December of last year when everyone was projecting that 2020 was going to be so awesome. And this was going to be the year that you crush all your goals. I totally pushed that back in December, you know, let's get all of our goals done in January. Let's get, you know, the home office organized. Let's lose weight. Let's make your garage a gym. Let's make the extra bedroom a gym. And it's, you know, get your gym goals, get your exercise. Like I pushed that all in the end of December. And then in February, well, February is kind of also a heart month too, because of Valentine's Day. And it's also the Heart Association pushes February to check your heart. So I mean, it kind of is too in February, but I was still doing a lot of like garages and home offices back in February. And then in the spring, people start, you know, there's just every month there's something that goes on, and I tailor all of my organizing pitches, I guess, so to speak, to take in that. And I follow a lot of the trends too. I've brought it up on the previous shows, like the mom cave was really big back in August when people were deciding how to figure out distance learning. And yet, because when moms were stuck home all day teaching their kids, you know, end of August for us, and not having an away space so that they can, you know, go and defrag in another part of the house and stuff. So, I mean, I kind of feel like I really follow the trends and spin and adapt, and, you know, that way organizing doesn't get old. And I mean, it may get old to the people that, you know, scroll past my stuff every day and go, oh, that lady, you know, but at the same time.
You know what? I think I disagree with you on that. I think that like, and I wanted to ask you this anyway, but I think like pop culture is like romanticizing this whole decluttering like culture now. You have Marie Kondo and The Home Edit on Netflix. Have you found that you've got an uptick in business or at least awareness of the space because of that pop cultural influence?
Well, it's kind of mixed. Like the Netflix show came out. The Home Edit has been an interesting thing. People, I'm not a bin organizer. My method is purge and then organize what's left over. And so I see the trend that I'm seeing with organizing is buy bins to hold your stuff and make your stuff look pretty, which is great, makes you feel better, but you still have a lot of stuff. And so during consultations, I let people know, you don't have to buy bins, we're just gonna use what you have, and probably got rid of half of your stuff. And so then they're like, oh, really? And I'm like, so you still on board? I'm like, yeah, we're totally on board. We don't like the container idea either. And I'm like, oh, because a million Netflix people love it and they keep buying all this container store stuff. Container store loves it, let's put it that way.
Oh, I'm sure. Their profits went up by like 20%.
Yeah.
So I kind of teach a different method. I'm doing more, I feel like my clients are slaves to their stuff. And so I want to release them of that slavery. So they only have so much time in their day or their weekends. And their weekends, I'm encouraging that they spend it with their family and not be slaves to laundry, tidying up, cleaning up, and everything. So if I can take their housework down from all day Saturday to maybe an hour and a half Saturday mm-hmm. morning, then that gives them the freedom to be with their family the remainder of the day, or maybe hire a housekeeper because they might realize that that's only an hour and a half of house cleaning. And that's, you know, really cheap in our area to have a house cleaner do that. And so anyways, so I'm more of like freeing them from the slavery and the consumerism and the materialism, you know, and that kind of thing. And every place has a home. So definitely it has gone up in the sense that I've been giving my clients permission to contact me and that it's okay that they're not skilled enough to organize and that I see things differently. So that's the marketing I've taken on pretty much since January, because Marie Kondo said anyone can do it and they get all their stuff out and then they get overwhelmed and then nothing gets put back and nothing gets donated. And then I come in and I kind of save the day. So I kind of been letting them know that it's okay that they're not qualified in this skill and not everyone can do it. Like there's architects and there's mm-hmm. doctors and then there's me that are natural organizers. So that's kind of the approach I've taken upon it. I haven't lost any work, but I've definitely noticed an up and down. Like Marie Kondo came out and some people straight up contacted me and said, I'm not going to be like that and come over. And then other people are like, I'm going to try to do that. And then 2 months later, they said, okay, come over. After it sat.
It's definitely a much bigger awareness than there used to be. I feel like it's just so out there on the internet and definitely on social. And people are sharing their before and after pictures of this like emotional pop culture thing that's happening now.
And I've been capitalizing on that where if they use my hashtag in their stories, I can give them advice virtually on what to do or how to improve it. Like I've gotten a few fridge hashtags where they go, hey, I organized my fridge. What do you think? And then they hashtag me or they add me into their story, like they tag me. And so then I've been replying on my stories like, oh, I think you did awesome. It's fantastic. But hey, consider using an egg crate to hold all your mustards and ketchups so that they are always ready to squeeze and not too watery. And then they go, oh my gosh, that's genius. And they run out and buy another, you know, they go out to their trash and they grab their egg crate, you know, lid or base, you know, the base. And, you know, and they do that. And then they take another picture showing what I suggested. And then we get I get a ton of messages like from people that watched both of our stories. So that's how I've been using that and everything and doing it virtually and everything. And I've really dialed in on my marketing where I'm exclusively marketing to moms in my area. So I use city hashtags like Fullerton Mom, Brea Mom, whatever my cities are right around me. So that, because they follow those hashtags on Instagram, it shows up on their feed. Like, oh, you're following this city mom Instagram? Look what happened, you know? And so I get a lot of, and that's following my insights and doing, and just like I said, drilling down, like how Megan said, I guess, about drilling down.
I think the one thing that you're missing, and you know, Sharifa asked the question, but you still haven't answered it, is, you know, when you say you're following the media calendar, you know, for me, what screams out is, you know, you talked about, you know, losing weight and New Year's resolutions. What screams out to me is what you're missing is the idea of mental health. Mm. Because for me, organizing is all about my mental health. And right now what's trending is the state of people's mental health during this coronavirus. And especially in particular children, but for mothers, having the children home and schooling them as well as working, I mean, to me, that blows my mind that you even could navigate that. But then to have a house that's, you know, clutter filled. So for me, if you were my client for January, I'd say your focus should be mental health, because it's got to be health related. It's got to be medical related, and you have to weave that into what you do. So for you, that's a perfect place for you to go. February.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll take it. I usually talk at some point about being overwhelmed, so that clutter makes people overwhelmed, and I kind of come in and take that burden and everything. So I mean, I guess that'd be a way of mental
That's
health.
Great.
I'll have to look at that.
You said something about like freeing up something.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's like people freeing up their time. I mean, so that they can be with family more and not. Because I run into the people, the moms that have four kids, and they have a mountain of laundry, and then it never gets put away, and they're just slaved to the weekend of this is laundry weekend, and this is all they do is laundry. So I kind of go through and, organize.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, you do a wonderful job, especially at using the examples and using the hashtags. But I think the thought of mental health is just to integrate and include that word that's trending specifically in it, so that it comes up when people are talking about it in the discussion. And that's kind of what I was referring to earlier about being able to spin something. Because if you're just telling the same story all year, and if you're watching the media calendar, you have to spin it again for February. What is the focus now on February? What's on the media calendar that we're going to refocus being an organization maven on and focus on this month and next month? So thank you for that, Megan.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, the other important thing to remember too, especially if you're trying to get picked up by media, is to utilize the keywords that are trending. That's why I suggested mental health as one of them, because that's going to be a big trending, subject for January. And you know, if they're looking for guests or they're looking for, you know, stories for print or whatever, they're Googling keywords. So make sure everything that you do in your hashtags has those keywords. Like, you know, I have a nonprofit that's focused on addiction, because I lost a son to a heroin overdose. And so all of the marketing, all of the marketing that we do, our website, every piece of marketing material that we have has all of the things that people would Google: treatment, addiction, heroin, overdose. And all of those things, you know, will get picked up by people in the media that their job is to find people who have experienced losing a child or, you know, heroin or whatever the story is. So that would be my other suggestion for both of you. And you'll be surprised.
Well, I was surprised during the whole George Floyd tragedy. A friend of mine called me and asked me to speak in Seattle and to speak at a rally. But she went to my website and she looked through my bio and she said, you have to go ahead and add diversity, equity, and inclusion so that people understand that's part of your background.
Absolutely.
And so because I was a speaker at her event, I added it to my website. But over the next few months, even during interviews, people would mention diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Right.
And that was part of one of the things that I was able to discuss. But if I hadn't added those keywords to my website and those keywords to my bio, I wouldn't have had that a lot of opportunities that I was able to get panels that they asked me to speak on, because they were looking for certain words.
Yeah, good for you. That's great.
Yes, thank you. But you talk about that as well, Allison, often about trends and specific words, specifically hashtags.
Did we scare you, Allison?
I think we just scared Allison for once in our life. Allison, but no, you talk about hashtags specifically, how you change up your hashtags, and you were just talking about the month. Do you use hashtags, Helen?
Absolutely. You know, pre-COVID, we did talk quite a bit about contactless retail and how it's so important. I think a lot of people still really don't realize that receipt paper is not regular paper. It's coated, it's thermal. Thermal paper is coated in toxic chemicals. And of course, there's dangerous chemicals in the ink. It's not really recyclable. So we were talking about the environmental and health benefits before COVID. Now, during COVID times, and hopefully soon after, you know, we'll continue to do that. We hashtag contactless. We do talk about, we have touched upon, Allison, you know, better organization. People don't want to be bombarded by paper. So it's a combination of those trending topics, for sure.
Absolutely. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Helen.
Oh boy, first spotlight. Okay. I guess, the thing that I would love people to take away is that it's so important to be a risk taker, and there's so much reward and value in that. I've never wanted to be the person who looks back on her life and thinks, what if I had tried this, that, and the other? And I think that it's never too late. You're never too old to try something. If you see a problem or you experience an annoyance just returning a pair of jeans, there's opportunity to develop that idea or that pain point into a business, into an area of expertise that you can take to the world. So be a risk taker, go for it.
And if people are interested in ReceiptMe, how can they find it?
They can find us online at receipt.me. It's spelled kind of funky because we like to be different. It's receipt.me. We are online, we're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Happy to talk to you.
We will check it out. Allison, what do you have for us?
I'm still stunned from the last question.
You are never stunned. You are never speechless. You need me to be posing for you. If you need help and you are in the Los Angeles or Orange County area organizing your home, maybe it's driving you crazy, it's overwhelming you. I don't even know if that's a word I'm allowed to use these days. But contact Allison.
For your mental health.
Yes, for your mental health, contact Allison Allman, the organization Maven. You can find her at all social media platforms at the organization Maven. How'd I do?
You did great. You're hired. I don't have to show up anymore.
Thank you. I'll do yours. I'll host and I'll do your role. I just switched seats. Megan, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so I mean, we would love to talk to any nonprofits that are looking to really bring awareness to what they do and what they're so passionate about. Public relations is something that, really is, really can take your business to the next level, unlike marketing, and it's got a real strategy behind it. A lot of people don't realize what public relations are and what we do, but really the bottom line is we take your business to the next level with a bunch of strategic opportunities. So we'd love to talk to you if you're a nonprofit, a small company getting going, or anybody else. With www.megallypr.com. We're located in New York, and it was my pleasure being here today. Thank you.
We have learned a lot from you. It was a pleasure to have you. And if you are interested in taking on any people running for Senate, we should talk. If not, we have to figure that out.
We know
out.
Who to support.
I know, huh? Show up. That's what we're going to do. Show up with the dog, with the family, everybody, and get me into office. You are all amazing women. I'm so excited, so grateful to have you on today's show. I want to thank you for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support. We appreciate you for tuning in every day, faithfully, weekdays at 8 a.m. But don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. Please support our guests. Visit their websites. Their information is in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Contact them. Work with them. Send them a message. And when you send them that tweet, that inbox, that email, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.